Vande Guru Nisabhaktam Isam Isavatarakam Tat Prakasam Satat Shakti Krishna Chaitanya Samyagam Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Godadoya Pushpavanto Chitrusando Tamanudo Yadadvitam Brahmanishada Tadapyasyatanuva Yat Atman Taryami Purusha Iti Sushansa Vibhava Sadai Swaryapurna Yaiha Bhagavan Sasvayam Nayam Na Chaitanyat Krishna Jagati Paratattvam Param Iha Anarpita Charim Chirat Karuna Yavatirna Kalo Samaparbhyutum Unachtava Rasam Seva Bhakti Shriyam Hari Punurata Sundara Juti Kadamba Sandipita Sadaridaya Kandare Skurato Sachinandana Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritir Ladini Shakti Rasmat Ekatmana Vapai Bhuvi Pura Deha Vedam Gatoto Chitanyakyam Prakatam Aduna Tadvayam Chaikyamaptam Radha Bhava Juti Suvalitam Numa Krishna Swarupam Sri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima Krishu Vanayaiva Svajo Yenat Bhutta Madhurima Krishu Vamaja Sokyam Chasya Mat Anubhavata Kidrisam Deti Lubat Tad Bhava Ja Samanjani Suchi Garbha Sindhu Harindu May the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachidevi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart, resplendent with the radiance of molten gold. He has appeared in the age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most sublime and radiant mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this world after remaining 13 months in the womb. Everyone was getting worried. It was taking too long. They didn't quite know what to do. But the grandfather of the child was a very learned astrologer. And he made calculations and said that soon the child will appear at an auspicious time. Just in the 13th month. At that time, there was a full moon. And at this time of the full moon, there was an eclipse at the same time of that full moon. In India, it is understood that at an eclipse, at the time of an eclipse, the dark planet Rahu enters before the sun or the moon and blocks the effulgence of the sun or moon. Rahu is not an auspicious planet, and therefore, to counteract this inauspicious influence, people in India, since ancient times, have been visiting holy places at the time of an eclipse. And they would bathe in the Ganges. And also, at that time, recite out loud the holy names of the Lord. Thus, in the holy place of Navadvip, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, at the time of his appearance, everywhere, people were bathing in the Ganga and chanting out loud the holy names of Hari. And it could be heard in all directions, everywhere. And thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared as the incarnation for this particular age, the Yuga Avatar, an age then referring to the Vedic period of the Kali Yuga, which lasts 432,000 years. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the presiding incarnation for this particular 432,000 years, offered the process of self-realization for this particular era, which is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. This congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the process that is most potent in this age. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, being non-different from Krishna, not only distributed the holy name, but Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also added special mercy to this holy name. It is described that when the child was very small, at that time the child, like all children, would cry. But the difference between this baby and other babies was, this baby would not stop crying, and very loud. And they didn't know what to do. But they tried different things, and some ladies started to chant and sing the Maha Mantra, and immediately the child, very quiet. And as soon as they stopped, cry again. Thus, by this arrangement, they had to have 24-hour kirtan, non-stop. They had to chant all the time the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to keep the child quiet and peaceful. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even as a baby, was manipulating the situation in such a way that 24 hours kirtan was going on. He was already starting his mission of spreading the holy name. From his early childhood, he began to display extraordinary activities. On his footprints, or rather the soles of his feet, one could see the marks of Vishnu. The marks of Vishnu are showing a chakra, or the wheel. It shows a thunderbolt. It shows a stick which is used to control an elephant. They have a stick in India with a metal point and a hook, something like this, and on top, and they hook it behind the ear of the elephant, or they touch an elephant at certain places, and they somehow or other can keep an elephant under control in this way. Not an easy feat, and the elephant is nicely walking next to the trainer on the road, and no problem. So in this way, the signs on Krishna's feet are there. The stick for controlling the elephant means that by taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, one can control the elephant of the mind. The mind is powerful like an elephant, difficult to control, but by the lotus feet of Krishna, easily brought under control. The thunderbolt on Krishna's feet, what does it mean? It means sometimes we say that, oh, my karma is so bad. So bad. I can never make it in spiritual life. I cannot make it to surrender to Krishna. But Krishna says, don't worry, I will smash your karma with my thunderbolt. Finished. Now you can surrender. In this way, the signs at Krishna's feet are there to encourage us. But you may say, yes, but what will happen to me if I spend all my time for spiritual life? If I give all my energy for spiritual life, then what will happen? Who will take care of my family, and who will take care of all our needs? Don't worry. Don't worry at all, because on Krishna's lotus feet there is also a barley corn, which basically means that everything material will be provided. Don't worry. In this way, Krishna, with the marks on his feet, is answering all our objections. He's already one step ahead. Literally, it's right there on his footprints. Krishna is showing us, don't worry, just surrender unto me. But still, we are hesitating. It is said, before appearing as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna had thought to himself, I have come in this world, I have taught the Bhagavad Gita, and at the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, I have said, Sarva Dharmam Paritaya Mamekam Saranam Vraja, Aham Tvam Sarva Bhavyo Moksha Ishami Ma Suchaha. I have said that give up all variety of religion or activity, just surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all the reactions of previous sinful activities. Thus, do not fear, Krishna said. And in this way he called for surrender at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, 5,000 years ago. And who did it? Well, some people. A few, they did, but most people were rendering lip service. Yes, lip service was quite popular. Prayers and blessings and all these things. And then carry on with material life. Thus, spiritual life became reduced as an external activity which was related to the family one would take birth in, and you had the religion of your family, and that was it, all over the world, basically. Your father a Jew, you're a Jew. Your father a Hindu, you're a Hindu. Your father a Muslim, you're a Muslim. You're a Protestant because your grandfather was a Protestant, and so on. And it simply became an external designation all over the world. But the true meaning of religion was lost. Everywhere, in every town and village the same, everything had been reduced to external activity. Lip service. I'm not saying that there was no substance at all. Definitely there were still some people who were sincerely trying in different places to go deeper in their spiritual experience, but it was rare. Let's be frank. It was rare. Wherever in the world, rare. Most people simply externally follow their religious tradition and no more. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came for a different purpose. He came to unite the world by teaching people of different traditions the true purpose of their religion. Srila Prabhupada was once challenged, and said, why are you trying to convert people into Hindus? Prabhupada replied and said, I'm not trying to convert anyone into Hindus. I'm simply trying to make Christians better Christians, Muslims better Muslims, and Hindus better Muslims, better Hindus, by teaching them the true purpose of their religion. Because the true purpose of religion is not external. It is about giving your heart. It is about giving everything. It is about understanding who is the proprietor. If Krishna is the proprietor, Bhaktaram Yagitapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, if he is the Sarvaloka Mahaishwara, if he is the supreme proprietor of all locations, then it means that he's also the proprietor here. Then what are we? Then we are caretakers. And if we see ourselves as a caretaker on behalf of Krishna, then everything changes. Instead of saying, this is mine, then we say, and this is also mine. No, it's mine. Then he says, no, I'm taking care of this on behalf of the Supreme Lord. It's not my property. I'm looking after it on behalf of him. So then the question arises, what is his purpose? What is his aim? It is said, Suridam Sarvadehinam, he is the friend of all living beings. Then we must also be the friend of all living beings. That gets tough because there are lots of living beings. All kinds of. And some are nicer than others. And if you have to be the friend of all living beings, that's a lot. Quite a lot, if you think about it. A lot of living beings to be friends with. Friends with the birds. Friends with the giraffes. Friends with lions and tigers. Friends with crocodiles. Friends with snakes and scorpions, or we know the tour through the zoo, and you go past all the different animals, lions, tigers, snakes, giraffes, and so on, and then there's a sign, now you are coming to the most dangerous animal in the zoo. And you go around the corner, you follow the sign, and you walk into a mirror. So, human beings, to be the friend of all, that is dangerous. No. One must be the friend and well-wisher of all. That is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is the story of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna, the Supreme Lord, He is there, not only in the heavens to receive our prayers. Oh yes, there is a God in heaven and He hears your prayers. And when He likes them, then He rains down different blessings. We are not reducing God to a personality or an entity who is above there, blessing, and that's about it. It rains money, or it rains bread, or it rains good fortune upon us. Nothing like that. No. He is more than that. Much more than that. He is active. He takes initiatives. It's not that He waits for us to do something. No, He does things on His own also. He does all kinds of things. He's an active person who actively enters into our life and who actively enters into this world. That is the Supreme Lord. Thus, the Supreme Lord appears again and again into this world. Again and again, the Lord appears into this world. Of course, not in a human body made of flesh and bones and whatever substances, but rather in a pure spiritual body. Pure transcendental, straight from the spiritual world, He appears in such a transcendental form and performs activities for the benefit of the conditioned souls. That's what He does. Again and again He reveals knowledge into this world. Prophets appear in different places of the world, and sometimes the Lord Himself appears to teach. Thus, this time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Lord, appeared in this particular age, this Yuga, this age of Kali. Some time ago, I was reading in the library. On my computer, I carry this huge library on the computer. It's inconceivable how much is on there. I have no idea what I have, right, on there, but it's there. So I was looking around and I was reading Zoroastrian literature, ancient scripture from Persia. And as I was reading for a while, I came to a point where it was described that in the land of Persia, there was a class of men. It started to describe that there was a tree. It described a tree and it said this tree had four roots: a golden root, a silver root, a copper root, and an iron root. And these four roots representing the four times. As I read it, I thought, this is strikingly familiar. I mean, it reminds me of the Vedic description of four periods of time known as yugas: a golden one, a silver one, a copper one, and an iron one. And I read on, and it described the golden roots representing a golden age of harmony and peace and wonderful age, and then gradually coming down to silver, to copper, and to iron, an age of materialism. It described that in the land of Persia, there was a class of men, they were wearing a thread around their waist. A thread around their waist. Again, I was thinking, this is familiar in the Vedic culture. We also have men who wear a thread around their waist. And I was thinking, where have I encountered this before? And then it says, these men used to preoccupy themselves with an activity called yasna. I go, wait a minute, yasna? Yasna, in the Vedic literature, called yajna, sacrifice. Brahmanas with a thread were performing yajna, sacrifice. Spelling mistake, yasna. I mean, that was pretty easy to catch. You know, you don't have to be a great proofreader to catch that one. I saw it straight away. So, thus I saw the parallel between Vedic culture and the culture of Persia. Then it went on. It said, but then a foreign invader would come into this land and it would suppress the original culture of Persia. And these men with the thread and the yasna would go underground and hide in the mountains and secretly continue their activities, it is said, all throughout. Until the end of times, and at the end of times, a prince from India would come on a white horse and he would drive out these foreign invaders. What's the name of the prince?
Kalki.
We find the same in the Vedic literature, that at the end of times, the end of Kali Yuga, an incarnation will come, Kalki, who will drive out all the demoniac forces from the world. So it was really interesting to read that, you know. I just saw this was a cross-cultural display of knowledge that exists in the Vedas and the same knowledge found in the ancient books of Persia. And I could see, yes, there are different ages, a golden one, a silver one, a copper one, and an iron one. And presently, we are in the Iron Age. So what does it mean, the Iron Age? It means basically that in the Iron Age, spirituality is down. No time, no interest, too busy, materialism is increasing. And selfishness is also ingredient. I and mine, and lust and greed, and tension and war and money and all these things, corruption and pollution and destroy the planet and so on, and insanity and name it, and world that is just really going day by day. And everyone is getting more and more sick, right? Yeah. If you just ask your neighbor what is wrong with them, this one has a hole in his heart, that one has a liver that has been soaked in too many substances, this one is going half blind, that one is deaf, another one has a chronic cough, the third one is, whatever it is, you know, everyone is having some affliction from negative karma in this age. And then I read about previous ages, and it is described that in the Silver Age, people were free from disease. Come on. Yes. There's no need for medicine. Can you imagine? No health insurance? No. No hospitals? No. No. And even at later times, Brahmanas who were knowledgeable would go door to door and offer a little herb, a little mantra, everything cured, finished. Simple. Mm. Now in the age of Kali, who has good karma? I don't know if you have any, but I don't have much. Good karma, difficult to find. Yes. So, this is the age, an age of materialism, an iron age. What do we do? Anyway, there are some benefits also. In the golden age, the Satya Yuga, human beings are very qualified. They live very long, 100,000 years, believe it or not. And they are mainly preoccupied with spiritual things. They are all saintly persons. And those who are of a lower nature, they're animals. In the Treta Yuga, the standard for human life comes down. And even beings that are more materialistic are getting human birth. In the Kali Yuga, human birth is easily available. Even those who are animalistic by nature get a human body in this age. It helps. It helps. Because spiritual life is hard to practice for animals. It is rare to find philosophers amongst the animals. You don't often see some animal sitting, a dog, deeply thinking about what is the purpose of life. A dog knows what is the purpose of life. He follows his nose. That is dog business. He lifts his leg and makes his mark on the world. It is quite clear to a dog what life is all about. Chase a few cars and try and bite the tires or whatever. What else? Sleep on the sofa. And the main thing is eat. Right? Eat. Eat whatever can be eaten. That is animal consciousness. So, this human form of life has an advantage. And in the age of Kali, the human form of life is easily given. You know, this age of Kali is something like, just as in the educational system, you have schools for children that are hard to educate. Right? This age is like that. So we're all like that. We are hard cases, difficult to educate, and somehow or other, we're getting a chance. That's what's going on. So here we are, struggling along and trying to make the best of it. And the funny thing is, we think that never before mankind has had such a developed civilization as we have today. Isn't it? They used to think primitive man, right? They used to think all kinds of things. There were Greek philosophers who used to think that the universe had a copper shell with holes in it, and that on the outside there was a big fire, and that the stars that you could see at night were showing the holes in the copper shell. That was one explanation. Now we laugh. They used to think the earth was flat. Ha ha. Now we know. Then they were thinking, and now we know. Modern man, what don't we know? A lot of things we don't know. Because as we found out different new things, we forgot the old. Our great continent of knowledge, we stand, modern man stands on a peak, on a great continent of knowledge. Yes, it is vast, it extends in all directions, but it is a drifting continent. A drifting continent, we are gaining knowledge on one side and losing it on the other. And we have forgotten everything about the past. Who still knows what herbs you can eat in the forest? I know only one, nettles. And I can recognize them because they sting, right? So I'm sure that I can eat those. The rest, I'm not so sure. Can you eat it? I don't know. Test it first. Anyone would like that? For example, I am from Holland, so the question, a Dutch question would be, can you eat tulips? That would be a relevant question maybe in the time of recession. I don't know, but I do know that you can eat tulip bulbs, because my parents ate tulip bulbs in the war. That I know. Let's see. Anyway, so I know two things you can eat: nettles and tulip bulbs. That's where it stops, right, for me. Because I never knew where milk came from until I was 10 years old and for the first time in my life went to a farm and I had the shock of my life. My God. The milk came from one part, that was okay, of the cow, but the other parts were so close. And all these brown substances were just coming out while the milk was taken. I was wondering, is there something dropping in my milk? I didn't drink milk for a week, I tell you. It didn't look as nice and clean as it did it came in bottles in my time. The bottles, you know. Now in a nice cardboard pack. Yes. Potatoes grow in plastic bags on shelves and so on. Yes. We have lost so much knowledge. What do we know about what was the knowledge of before? What to speak of deeper knowledge, not only material knowledge, but what to speak of deeper knowledge, what to speak about the goal of life. What is the goal of life? To keep my head above water. In this modern society, it's a struggle. Somehow or other, got to work hard, we have it good, but you've got to really work for it. There's no time. I mean, 8 hours work, 1 hour lunch break, sitting in the traffic for 1 hour in the morning at least, going back 1 hour, check, 11 hours at least. Then coming home, fix all the broken things, and meanwhile, family and kids, all chaos. How much time? No time. No time to think, no time to live. And thinking anyway is dangerous. Don't think, whatever you do. Please don't think, because you might question, what am I doing with my life? People that sit and think, they start to think, is it all worth it? Don't think. Turn on a TV, quick. Go on the internet, whatever you do. Don't think. Stay busy. Keep busy. Very busy. Yes. Thus, the deeper questions in life, why am I here? What is the goal of life? These questions are lost now. Lost. Who asks that? You go out home in the street. Hey. You just say, hey. And you stop someone and says, what is the goal of life? And they look at you like, are you okay? They shake their head. Some idiot, you know. And they come home. Can you believe it? I met some nutcase. He approached me in the street, you know, just like that. Hey, and you know what he asked me? What is the goal of life? My God, no. It's getting crazier every day. This is actually what's going on, if you think about it. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us what is the goal of life. Not only by giving us long, drawn-out teachings written in complicated books, because who reads those? We only read cartoons. Yeah? Who reads books? Right? So, difficult to read. These books, these spiritual books, are sometimes hard to read. And there is a story, it's not meant to be disrespectful, but there is a story about a devotee who was trying to sell books in the street and met someone and offered the book, and this person said, "No, please, don't disturb me." Sorry, sir, I mean, what's the problem? He said, "Oh, such a problem. I'm suffering from insomnia." I said, "Oh, then I have the solution. This book is the solution. It always works. One page, sleep guaranteed." For most of us, we fall asleep when we read these books. We cannot read anymore. Who can study the Vedic scriptures now for a long time. Very rare. Some people with glasses. But most, they cannot. Thus, what to do? But music? Oh, everybody likes music. You like music?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. You like a dancing? Yes, I like a dancing. Oh, yes, I do. You like a singing? Oh, yes, I love a singing. Yes. You need some singing lessons, maybe. Even the crows like singing too. Anyway, so singing is natural. Music is natural. People, everybody is singing and swinging. So it's like that. So an easy process for this age, a natural process, a joyful one, not a dry one, but. No, not like that. We sing, we dance, we sing, we chant. That is actually the main thing. Philosophy follows also. Naturally, one has some questions, one wants some answers, and those one finds in the books. But first we chant. That's the main thing. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood. That is what people can do. Have a party. Before Krishna consciousness, I tried other things. I tried one Buddhist monastery, but, well, it was austere. You had to rise very early. And it was, there were long, long prayer sessions and just going on and on. I could tolerate that. But when it came to breakfast, that was the tough part, because they gave one little piece of bread with miso, you know, which is like a salty soybean paste, which is, as far as I'm concerned, short for miserable. Miso. Miserable. Absolutely no fun in that, you know. So it's just, it's very healthy, you know what I mean? It's one of those breakfasts that is absolutely healthy, but where's the fun? So as soon as I saw the breakfast, I realized this. I had a deep philosophical realization, and it was, does spiritual life have to be a life of self-denial? Do we have to deny ourselves pleasures of life? Is that spiritual life? I said, no, it cannot be. Spiritual life must be full of taste. It must be full of joy. It must be full of happiness. So I left that process, that monastery. And then, yes, then in Krishna consciousness, it was right there. Some say kitchen religion. Yes. I liked that part. Lord Chaitanya's secret weapon, prasadam. It was certainly the first reason why I walked into the door. Somehow or other, that food, it was good. So I found the local restaurant and I came there, and then I found out you could also get it for free. Right? So, you know, why pay? So I went for the free version and it was good. There was no limits. You get as much as you want, and every Sunday 15 preps. 15 preps it was. It was big time. So it was nice. Lord Chaitanya's movement. Yes, and there was something about it. Each preparation was special. There was no ordinary prep. Everything was special. Everything was made with attention. Nothing was slapped together. Quick, instant. Put it in the microwave and bing, and here's your hot meal, you know. It wasn't anything like that. It was just like the meal was dancing on the tongue. It was pleasure at every bite. It was just wonderful. And it was just, is there more? And there was more also. So immediately one could taste the devotion. One could taste, this is not ordinary. Yes, it had been offered to Krishna, and thus it's spiritual, and definitely there was something about it. Prasadam is not ordinary. I went for it, right? I became an addict. I had to have it again and again. Yeah. So it didn't last long before I was back in the Hare Krishna temple. Then the music was also going strong and people were dancing and so on. And I must say that I got into it. I don't mind, a bit of dancing and jumping around, and it was very joyful. Thus, this movement is just—it's based on pleasure. It's not based on austerity. The whole thing is—it's a process which brings out it natural pleasure. The interesting part when I began to philosophically understand the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that I could see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not just teaching a process, but he was just beginning to reveal the eternal spiritual activity. Basically, he was bringing down the spiritual activity of the spiritual world to this world. Golokire Premadana Harinama Sankirtana, or in the wealth of the spiritual world, is that everyone in great love and ecstasy is chanting the names of Krishna and then taking prasad, right? The transcendental foodstuffs. And we're doing the same. Thus I could see the process and the goal are the same. That was interesting. He gave us the perfect process or the perfect activity, but because we were not perfect, we couldn't immediately do it perfectly. In the beginning, the first time I was in the temple, actually, I was standing there, and there was the kirtan was going on, and someone stood next to me and said, "Dance." And I go, "Why would I dance? You know, you're not John Wayne, you know." "Okay, you know, you dance. But he had no guns, you know. So why would I dance, you know? I would only dance with the guys shooting the guns. Then I'll dance, you know. Dance. But I didn't see no guns, so I was not ready to dance. I mean, I thought, you know, I dance when it comes from my heart. That I'm not going to just dance when someone says dance. Unless someone is very beautiful, then maybe, you know, would you like to dance? Well, then maybe I would have done it, right? In those days, right? Not anymore. But that was where I was at in those days. So I wasn't just dancing. Some guy says dance. I didn't dance with guys. Anyway. So, you know, I couldn't relate to it. But then, after a short while, well, you know, it was a good beat and my foot started to naturally tap along, and before I knew it, I was dancing. Yeah? And it was very nice. So this Krishna consciousness, this movement of Lord Chaitanya is like that. 500 years ago, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he as a sannyasi, as a preacher in the renounced order, was traveling all over India, and basically he was dancing. He was chanting the names of Krishna, and he was dancing, and in such a way like no one had ever seen. No one had ever seen. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced, it is described, it is recorded, the history is recorded of his life in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it said people came running from everywhere to see it. Immediately, it just spread like wildfire, like no one had ever seen such dancing. He would throw himself without any sense of control into the air, but with great grace and elegance, in a mood of like great joy and surrender, with graceful long movements, and no one had ever seen anything like it. Because, you know, when we dance, we're all a little self-conscious and we do a little... two on the left and two on the right. And, yeah. And a turn and, you know... you try and put a pattern in there. In India, it's a different style. When Indians dance, you have to watch out because if you have glasses, because hands are everywhere. In Indian crowd, I shake them off. You know. Experience. And also when Tapas is handling the microphone. That was 2 millimeters. Yeah. So the point that I'm trying to make is that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his dancing and his chanting, attracted enormous crowds, huge crowds. And the people became so ecstatic in seeing him dance, they knew he is not an ordinary person. They knew he is an amazing person, and they wanted to take some dust from the place where he had been. And they were taking some dust from the road where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been, and they took the whole road. There was such a crowd, they took the whole road. That was it. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his mercy was in this way, spreading everywhere. People would join the kirtan and they wouldn't come back. Family members would come looking and they would also join the kirtan. They would all come back. Whole villages emptied out and disappeared in that chanting and dancing. Yes? So it was all based on incredible transcendental inspiration. But that was not everything. Then followed by very deep philosophy. Philosophy that explains to us that A, we are spiritual beings, eternal. Within the body is an eternal spirit soul. And that soul doesn't die when the body dies. That is the first understanding. That's found in Bhagavad Gita. And then the second point was, not only are we eternal spiritual beings in a temporary material body, but we are also eternal servants of the Supreme Lord. And thus, all our activities are meant for His pleasure. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the same message from the Bhagavad Gita, that all our activities are meant for His pleasure, that He is the proprietor, not we. He is the proprietor. We are the caretakers, the servants. We take care on His behalf. And because He is the well-wisher of all living beings, we must use everything for the benefit of all. That's not so easy. It's quite a puzzle. But in this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught the world how to be all-inclusive and how we could become the well-wisher of all living beings. And this He was teaching... One doesn't become a well-wisher just by giving material things. Or let's help others, let's give them warm coats in the winter and nice warm soup in the winter, and things like this. That's not enough. That's not enough. We give warm coats and warm soup and they stay alcoholics. Right? No. We must also cure them. But first, O doctor, heal thyself. It starts at home. Because we ourselves also are corrupted by the Iron Age. What is normal in the Iron Age is not normal at all. I was just on a journey on Singapore Airlines last month, and it was interesting because you have these stewardesses, they all look the same in their Singapore outfits and elegant and so on. And they have that Asian culture, right, of like sort of a very pious culture and a service attitude, you know, like we don't have that in Europe in the same way. So they were like very nice, you know, they were coming with folded hands like this, and they have a nice smile, and they bow down like that, very elegant and in a real nice service mood, and then they'd say, "Would you like some whiskey?" or would you like some beef, or would you like fish? But all with the gestures of Vedic culture. It was really interesting. I was studying the whole thing, and I was watching how, yes, they have the culture, but somehow or other they've lost the knowledge. The culture is intact, the respectful attitude, you know, not like, "Would you like fish or beef?" Mm? Okay, fish or beef, you know, plunk. Yeah. Okay, economy class, right? Yeah. No, even in economy class, they have that culture, you know, of like, folded hands and so on. Very nice, like Vedic culture. But the knowledge is lost. So all that is lacking is the knowledge. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu combined the enthusiasm with knowledge, followed by culture. And that is this movement we have here today. And thus we are seeing here the tradition that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started in India, based on ancient Vedic scripture, and we see that tradition here today. And it is a wonderful tradition because it can bring people together from all cultures. Prabhupada used to say, and I'll end with that, Prabhupada used to say that this movement is the true United Nations. He liked to talk about the United Nations, Prabhupada. He used to say, "They say United Nations, but every year there are more flags." Right? So, how are the United Nations when every year there are more flags? Right? He said, but here is the true United Nations, and I think in this temple it's true. Yeah? Because if we look at all the nationalities, okay, let's hear a few nationalities. I see Swedish, that I see. I see American. I see Indian, that I also see. I look in my watch and use it as a mirror, I see Dutch. Now I have to see. What else do we see? I see.
Wales,
yes, I see. What else do we see? What other nationalities? Moroccan, he told me yesterday. What else do we have?
Nepali,
Tikcha.
Romanian.
Swiss.
Czech.
What else?
England.
Sami. Huh?
Sami.
What's that?
Sami, not for Sweden, Finland, Norway.
Oh, Finland, Norway. I never heard of it.
In
North
of Scandinavia.
North of Scandinavia, I see. Lapland, I see.
Amen.
Bolivian. More.
Brazil.
Look at this. Anything else?
Finnish.
More. South African. Yes. What else?
West Indian.
What else?
Italian.
It's even more than that sort. It's amazing, actually. Because I was just... Well, I knew that there were a few nationalities, but there was... Still more?
Czech.
We had Czech before.
Lithuanian,
Latvian. It's Baltics, yes.
German,
also, yeah. Yeah, it's really something. So if we are the proof here, we are the United Nations, somehow or other, with all our cultures, all the differences, we come together. Why exactly? We don't know, but the main reason is we like it. We experience some taste, some pleasure. That's the basis of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then underneath it, we find there is actually a very deep philosophy which is very noble, and it brings out the noble side in us. Right. And if you develop that noble side, then you begin to you can begin to love yourself. That's the beginning of loving the world. Right? If you look in the mirror in the morning and you think, God, do I hate you? Then, you know, it's difficult. But if we can ourselves feel that we are doing the right thing, then you find an inner state of mind which is called peace. Very rare to find nowadays. Peaceful within. That is the position of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And from that platform, one can live a wonderful life at present, and at the end of life, return back to Godhead. That is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that is what we remember on his transcendental appearance day. Thank you very much. So Tapas Prabhu will tell us what happens next. First I come down from this seat.